Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. My name is Christina Clack, and I'm happy to be here this morning. Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and an open-minded congregation. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, gender, or family structure. We welcome you no matter what your age or your ability or your inabilities. Later in the service, we will invite visitors and guests and returning friends to introduce yourselves so that we might get to know you better. On Sunday mornings, we provide a wide variety of services. They are presented either by a Prairie member, a member of the wider community, or by our minister, Sandra Ingham. Today, we're very happy to have a guest from our wider community, from the Sierra Club, and I will be honored to present her later in the program. Now it's time for our presentation, and I'm delighted to have the honor of introducing our guest today. Shala Werner has been the director of the Sierra Club John Muir Chapter in Wisconsin since 2008. She earned her MS and PhD in entomology at the UW-Madison, where she studied forest beetle diversity and an invasive insect called the introduced basswood thrips. She previously worked as an entomologist for the Pennsylvania Department of Conservation and Natural Resources in development for Wart FM Community Radio and the Natural Resources Foundation of Wisconsin, and as the volunteer co-president of the Wisconsin National Organization for Women. She enjoys camping, reading, and canoeing with her husband Andy and their children Darwin and Miranda. So please help me welcome Shala.
And thanks so much to all of you for having me here today. It's great to be here in the summer. I was here a couple years ago for a holiday celebration, but there wasn't just the cicadas and the wildflowers that you have today. So it's great to be here. Thanks so much. I might have to peek around, but can everyone hear me in the back? Great. And so today I'm going to be talking about clean energy. I'll try not to take too much time, but sometimes it's an exciting topic, so you might want to give me the 5-minute warning if I if I get too involved there. And I might try to, so most of the kids have exited, so that I won't need to, but I'll try to make it approachable. And if I am too basic, I've been told that 98% of you are already Sierra Club members, so I hope that's the case. That's pretty great for an audience. I commend you on that. If you're not yet a member, I brought some membership forms that I'm obligated to say that, of course, but anyway, it's great to be here, and I'm going to be talking about climate change and clean energy today. So with that, let's have the first slide, please, see if that's working. So maybe by a show of hands, how many are already Sierra Club members? Just because if you're already members, maybe I'll blow through pretty quickly. Good to know. Thank you. So it's about 70-30, perhaps. So as you probably know, we were founded in 1892 by John Muir, famous conservationist, and we have about 15,000 members and supporters throughout the state of Wisconsin and about 1.4 million across the United States. Our mission is basically to explore, enjoy, and protect the planet. And in Wisconsin, we're focused on Wisconsin's waters, energy sources, clean transportation, protecting different parts of the state, especially the northwestern part of the state right now, from destructive mining proposals. And those are our priorities. In the past, Sierra Club was really focused on wild places. And so some of the things that we did in the past was to help stop the proposed Crandon mine in northeastern Wisconsin and stop Perrier's proposal to create a huge water bottling plant right in Adams County, near where John Muir grew up, actually. So But today, the Sierra Club, like most environmental organizations, is focused on addressing the serious, urgent threat of climate change. Okay? And so, John Muir, how many in the room have actually been to John Muir's boyhood home where he grew up in Marquette County? So, just a few of you. We actually have an event coming up this October. It's our annual fall retreat called the Autumn Assembly. And on Sunday, we'll be having a guided tour of Muir Park. It's only about an hour away. So John Muir was inspired to protect wilderness right here in Wisconsin. So although he was born in Scotland, his family moved here to Wisconsin because of the farming possibilities. And he did some very hard work on the farm and luckily didn't drown in Fountain Lake, which is now called Ennis Lake in Marquette County. And you can go up and see this beautiful place today. It's a county park, and across the street there's the Fox River National Wildlife Refuge. It's a beautiful place, great time to visit now or in October. So I highly recommend it. Nice walk with the kids, that kind of thing, or without. So this basically describes the Sierra Club in Wisconsin. We're always in need of more members because we are mainly a volunteer-powered group at the state level. So we have three staff that works to do all the lobbying, fundraising, electoral work, and most importantly, volunteer coordination. And we do have six local groups right now that are active around the state. In Madison, your local group would be the Four Lakes group. And so they do hikes and lake cleanups. They do something called recycling away from home. So if you've ever seen the recycling bins at things like the Orton Park Fest that's coming up, it's the Four Lakes group volunteers that do that. And then in Madison, there's also something called the Inner City Outings, which is a special section of the Sierra Club that works to get youth that wouldn't have the chance to otherwise out into nature, either doing hikes or canoe trips or camping, things like that. And outings are a big part of what we do. And I would say historically, some people were attracted to the John Muir chapter, and it's actually our 50th anniversary this year because of outings. And before we were even a chapter officially in 1963, we had this amazing rock climbing section. And you can still see pictures on our anniversary website of people climbing Peatonwell Rocks near Nisida, Wisconsin. You'd never know we had those rocks in Wisconsin, especially not in San Francisco. They think it's all, you know, flat and cows, but actually we do have some topography, and we still have a lot of outings. So most of those are free, although I would like to mention, since it was already brought up by Christina, the Natural Resources Foundation, where I used to work, also offers wonderful field trips, chances to get out and about around the state throughout Wisconsin. Great trips for people of all ages. We recently went to the McGuanago River on a mussel collecting trip led by a DNR employee that was just awesome. So it's fantastic, and I highly recommend the many nonprofit groups in Wisconsin that do outings, because there's some spectacular places to see. So now for the sort of downer part of the presentation, but I'm glad that you're sticking through it. So climate change, as we all know and we've all seen with last summer and just the pattern over the past few decades in Wisconsin and elsewhere, higher temperatures, longer droughts, hotter oceans, influences also on the Great Lakes, melting ice caps at an alarming rate, and rapid sea level rise that could really impact a lot of places in the world. So it's something that is serious, and we need to do something about it soon. Looks like this one got a little bit cut off, but I'm sure all of you remember last summer. I had to cancel my son's July 8th birthday party because it was dangerous near Nisida at Buckhorn State Park. It was 100 degrees in the shade, even at midnight. And it went on for weeks, as we all know, and that's You know, something that if it happened 1 year in Wisconsin and was a fluke, maybe that's weather, but we've seen a pattern, and that pattern's pretty disturbing, and it caused a lot of damage to our cherry and apple crops. I don't know how many of you go apple picking in the fall, but that was almost a non-existent activity last fall. And it had a lot of economic impacts in addition to environmental impacts. And now I thought it was, you know, rich of, I'm glad he's doing it, I've got to say, that the governor is seeking disaster aid in response to the flooding and relentless rain we saw this spring in 11 counties that caused over $9 million of damage. And I mean, this is a glimpse of what could be much more common in the future if we don't do anything. And so James Hansen, many of you have heard of this NASA scientist that's become a climate activist, that's basically warning us, and this wasn't this year that he said this, so that we have at most 10 years not to start thinking about climate change, but to fully implement our plans to address it. It's something that's just gonna change everything about the way we live and the way we farm, the way our forests look. In Wisconsin, we've got the eastern hemlock tree that's beautiful and free of hemlock woolly adelgid, I'm happy to report, as far as I know, because of our colder climate than places like Pennsylvania that have that invasive insect, for instance. And you know what's going to happen also with disease rates and everything if we fail to take action on climate change and reduce some of the things that we're doing to contribute to that. So, but the way we see this at the Sierra Club is that we can do something, and there's so many different ways we can take action on climate change, both at the individual level and at the policy level, which ultimately we're going to need. I mean, so despite the fact that Congress is kind of not super active right now in addressing the concerns from immigration to climate change to healthcare even that we face, ultimately they're going to need to take action. Burying one's head in the sand isn't the answer. Or continuing to deny the problem or to claim that clean coal is some kind of reality when indeed it's just not. You know, and we have the technology and the brain power right now to take action, whether it's through energy efficiency, which is the cheapest, most effective way to address climate change. And in case I forget to say anything, how many of you have contacted Focus on Energy or gotten a home energy audit done through that program? So that's great, many of you have. We were able to do some really common sense upgrades to our home and get about $900 back in rebates at the state level for the about $2,000 of work that we had done that was mainly insulating the house, you know, very low tech options that are here right now. And so if it's feasible, it's a fun thing to do. You get a blower door test and you get almost all the money back for actually doing that energy audit of your home. And it's well worthwhile. It's the first thing I would recommend before people even look into things like renewables, which are another great way to address climate change. And then there's just the other things like common sense, everyday things that people can do, like trying to drive less or driving more efficient cars, taking transit. So many fun things that people can do that address the problem that, you know, my suggestion would be let's do that stuff now. And as we keep trying to get better policies, but don't wait for the politicians to act, because we all know that with the money that we have in politics these days, we're gonna need to also take action on our own and just be the model of good behavior that we wanna see in government and everywhere. And so we've worked a lot on clean energy. We actually call this the Beyond Cold Clean Energy campaign at the Sierra Club. And some of you might have even been involved with our campaign to defeat the proposed Alliant Energy coal plant in Cassville, Wisconsin. That was when I first started in 2008, and I never thought, well, they've never denied a coal plant before, so I really thought we were gonna lose. And I was new, and I was just like, really? But somehow the 5,000 comments to the Public Service Commission made the difference. And they didn't build that coal plant. And you know what? We didn't need another coal plant on the Mississippi River. We've got an overcapacity of power, mainly because of the over 60% of our electricity that comes from coal right now that makes people sick and contributes to global warming. And we also have done other things, getting the Charter Street plant that on UW-Madison's campus that I obliviously walked by every day when I went to school there to comply with the Clean Air Act of all things. And now they'll be switching to natural gas instead of biomass that we had hoped and pushed for. It's still cleaner, but of course there are major concerns about natural gas. And we supported uniform wind siting rules in Wisconsin that were necessary to overcome the patchwork of city, county, state regulations that were preventing any wind development in the state. Those rules were suspended during the last legislative session, and it killed three wind projects, hundreds of jobs, and it dashed our chance to get more clean energy in Wisconsin, but we're still fighting to keep that law and those important rules. And I'm not gonna go through the other ones, but just in the interest of time. And probably the most important law we have in Wisconsin is called Act 141 in terms of clean energy. It requires our utilities that are investor-owned to get at least 10% of their energy from renewable sources like solar and wind. And in 2010, Governor Doyle at the time allowed some other things to count that include high temperature anaerobic garbage burning that we didn't support, but for the most part that hasn't come to pass, luckily. And almost every utility is already either met that 10% requirement or on track to meet it by 2015. Now that's a good thing and a bad thing because they now have no clean energy projects planned for the future because evidently you've got to make them do it. And energy efficiency, that's how we got the focus on energy program was Act 141. It requires utilities to invest 1.2% of their revenues into the program. That's generated over 24,000 jobs and really prevented the emission of huge amounts of greenhouse gases, sulfur dioxide, nitrogen oxide. So soot, smog, and greenhouse gas emissions have been reduced so much by the Focus on Energy program. Unfortunately, funding for that program was also cut in 2010, and the administrator was changed from the local Wisconsin company, WEC, Wisconsin Energy Conservation Corporation, to Shaw Environmental, which I would say has some different ideas about clean energy. And they're not a Wisconsin company, and we're gonna need to really push them. You know, and I'm not sure how that fits in with the whole open for business motto. I'm not sure if it does. And at the same time, during our last budget, and I don't mean the one that just finished up in June, the budget 2 years ago capped the utility contributions to Focus on Energy at 1.2%, regardless of what the data says about how many jobs would be created or how much ratepayers would save if we increased the contributions to that program. So we might need to put some pressure there, but for now, that's a tough nut to crack, I'm gonna say. So next one. And so right now, as you all know, we do have this tough climate at the state capitol, especially, and because of the utilities already meeting the renewable goals, we just don't see new development on the horizon. And I've just listed the wind projects in particular that were canceled when the wind siting rules were suspended. but I don't want to belabor that. And of course, the surplus of coal power, dirty power that we have, means that every time we walk into the Capitol to ask for more renewables, they're like, what do you want? We've already got so much electricity online. Maybe shut that down. That's what we would like to see, but that's been the challenge. So, and then there's the opponent. So many of you might have heard the claims about wind turbines making people sick, giving people insomnia. We have thoroughly looked into that. There's been peer-reviewed scientific studies on the side that say there's just nothing to the infrasound claims. In fact, they've done studies where people learn about the wind turbine alleged health effects, like insomnia or dizziness or liquor issues, and then they've exposed half the subjects to a treatment of actual infrasound and half the subjects to nothing, and it was shown that whether or not they received the actual treatment or not, if they heard about the possible dangers of turbines, you know, your mind has a way of feeling those effects. And also, who knows? I mean, I know that there's a highly sophisticated information or misinformation machine that's probably funded by the status quo that's actually going out to rural areas. And, you know, case in point, Calumet County, my mother-in-law got a nice DVD about how wind turbines, not coal plants, are going to endanger your health. And so we've got this big mountain to climb, and it's almost a communicated disease, I think they call it, when people can just get an idea into their head. It's sort of like a meme that perpetuates, and it's something we're going to have to fight against with logic and science, maybe. And then the, what did you say? help us out, yeah. Well, we're always looking for volunteers. So, and then there's the claims about property values. There's been some interesting studies on that by realtors groups too that haven't found any correlation. And in fact, if you look in some of the places in our state where we have wind turbines, farmland is actually pretty valuable these days, you may have noticed, and the property values really haven't been going down. And I did hear of somebody who abandoned their house because they had wind turbines nearby, and I thought about, I'll take it. Let's go to clean energy bed and breakfast or something. So anyway, I think science and simple terms are the way to address the opponents, which are always, there's always going to be that out there. Also, keep in mind, this is pretty new to people. People are used to seeing the Kewaunee nuclear plant that recently shut down on the coast of Lake Michigan. People are used to seeing coal plants right along, you know, Lake Winnebago, even in Menasha. And people aren't used to the wind turbines. It's something new, and it's bound to cause some concern. So some of that, I think, is just natural. It's new. Okay. And so what we're looking for, and I've got a petition that if you would care to sign it, that would be wonderful, but there's no pressure. If you wanted to pass it around, Mary or others, I got that in the front row, along with you know, an event that we have coming up. But basically, we would like to see stronger renewable energy goals. So that's called renewable electricity standards or renewable portfolio standards in Wisconsin. So at least 25% by 2025. Really, I think we might need more than that. But let's start with something that passes the last test and go from there. Because that would more than double what we have now. Net metering is a policy that allows you to get some credit back if you have a solar system, for instance, on your roof and you actually produce more energy than you use. So in a lot of cases, I've heard about people who have solar panels that get a credit or a check instead of a bill from their utility. So that's that policy. Wisconsin gets about a C on net metering relative to other states because our cap is pretty low at 20 kilowatts, and every utility just decides at a whim how they calculate the credit, whether it be monthly or annually, and whether to change that program at any time. So it's not something that you can count on when you're buying a solar system to say, you know, how much is this going to save me over the next 10 or 20 years, because it's a little bit uncertain. And then finally, we're pushing to allow anybody who wants to lease their roof space for solar panels or other renewable energy systems. And so what's great about that is that instead of having to pay $10,000 or $20,000 up front to get your solar system, now the upshot is that somebody else owns and maintains that system and you have no, you don't have to pay for it. They're basically just using your roof space on your property. And the downshot, I would say, is that you don't own the system, and so I would say there's little negative to the system, and the 22 other states that have adopted this policy, which is also called power purchase agreements, or third-party leasing, have seen solar just expand astronomically. And so there's some big department stores, and maybe Land's End has a vast amount of roof space that they could just lend to a company that would own those solar panels. They would get the PR, we would get the clean energy. What's not to love? So, and oh, also churches, because you're a nonprofit, you would not get some of the federal tax incentives if you went ahead and paid for a solar installation on the Prairie UU Church, but with this agreement, the owner of the system would be able to take advantage of that.
I guess, is there something current in Wisconsin law now that prevents someone from doing this?
It's actually a gray area, and you may have heard, that's a good question, that the city of Monona has decided to move ahead with third-party leasing in the absence of legal clarity. But I would say that most companies and property owners are worried about getting sued. And they just don't have the resources to go through a battle like that. We've got 135 solar companies in Wisconsin. And with the policies we have now that really are pretty crapola, they're just not up for a protracted court battle. They don't have the resources, and they just don't want to go there. Mm-hmm. Yes.
You'll have to repeat the question because they don't have mics.
Oh, and Maggie?
Maggie.
Maggie, is that right?
Yeah.
Good. So I would say that for every place that actually has a good solar potential, she's saying that all government buildings should be required to use renewable energy. And I think that there's solar that makes sense for some people. Maybe wind makes sense for other buildings, geothermal, solar hot water. But it depends on the site. And actually, we passed a bill in the previous two legislative sessions ago. Time flies when you're having fun. When Governor Doyle was still in office, we passed a bill to require all government buildings to be at least LEED Silver certified. So that would have improved, especially energy efficiency, and made state government a leader, which I think is very important. Passed both houses of the legislature. It was Representative Malepsky at the time, his bill, and he was a legislator from Stevens Point. And Governor vetoed it. I don't know why. It's still hurting us. I mean, that's the kind of thing. But the bill's been drafted, and we can bring it back in the future. I think we should.
Can I make another comment?
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, not quite sure.
Okay, well, let me just, I'll try to hurry quick, and then we'll go to the next slide. And so this slide is very busy, but it basically shows that Wisconsin, with our 10% renewable electricity standard, which in 2006 was pretty groundbreaking, now is dwarfed by almost every other state that has, so there are 29 states that have renewable portfolio standards. And now, several years later, we're almost at the bottom of the pile. So even though it looks like Michigan just has 10% too, they require all that energy to come from Michigan and create Michigan jobs. We do not. We're getting a lot of wind from Iowa right now. Minnesota
and Illinois both have 25% renewable electricity standards. And you might have heard that Minnesota, in addition, just passed this new law to require 4% of their electricity to come from solar. That's going to take their solar installations, which are tied with Wisconsin at 13 megawatts right now, which is pretty tiny. You consider your typical power plant, unless it's Oak Creek at 1,200 megawatts, is about 300 megawatts. So 13 megawatts is small, but that one policy could cause Minnesota's development to skyrocket and have 450 megawatts over there before we know it. Okay? So we don't want to fall behind in, you know, these and many other things. And so this just shows how many megawatts of wind are installed in each of the states. And I would just ask you to focus on the states near Wisconsin. Iowa is very windy, but they also had one utility who just decided to go full bore into wind, even in the absence of policy. And they actually have 5166 megawatts of wind compared to our 649 right now. And their unemployment rate is lower, their electricity rates are lower. All the claims about wind being unreliable can be disproven right next to us in Iowa. Illinois is beating us. What? I grew up in Illinois. Indiana? Oh my God. So we need to, you know, step it up. So that's the point. And then, you know, this has consequences. Like, there's a lot of talk about being open for business, but why aren't we open for clean energy business? And I'm sure that rejecting the Medicaid expansion also had something to do with this. Rejecting high-speed passenger rail also had something to do with this. But every other state, again, is beating us in jobs. Why? We need to embrace the modern technologies, not extractive mining and, you know, blowing things up and whatever else they want to do, you know, drilling in the Great Lakes. Let's step into the future, or even the present at this point, and create some jobs. Because, you know, beyond the environmental benefits, a lot of people need family-supporting jobs, and it's pretty hard to be an active citizen when you're worried about your next paycheck, and that's when people get desperate and environmental issues become more contentious. All right? And so there are opportunities, and I might have to dig this out. I think I brought some flyers about the Highland Wind Farm. It's a proposed clean energy development for St. Croix County, which is right on the border of Minnesota in northwestern Wisconsin. The Public Service Commission has denied this project twice after the town board was taken over by a new town board. And they have been opposing this project for various reasons. I would say the health impacts or unproven health effects of the project have been on the forefront of their concerns that they vocalized. There is a public hearing coming up in Madison. It says August 14th, but the Public Service Commission can take a while before they accept actual citizen testimony, so we're suspecting that that might not happen until the 15th. So I just wanted to mention that since you all are in Madison, and if you're really fired up and available to go, we would keep you posted on that. The public notice says 9:30 in the morning on August 14th on Whitney Way, the Public Service Commission headquarters. We really want people to focus on the benefits of this project, powering 25,000 homes with clean energy, creating jobs, providing revenue to this mostly agricultural area, keeping family farms rather than suburban sprawl on the landscape. And this is just, I don't want to go through this slide too much because time is short, but it basically says that enhancing our renewable electricity standard would create jobs and revenue. And then, I don't know, has anyone been to Germany here? I have not. It's amazing. And they just decided similarly, and people will say, oh, Wisconsin's not any sunny California. Well, neither is Germany. But they have 24,000 megawatts of solar installed right now, and 280,000 people working in the clean energy industry. You know, I mean, we adopted their beer drinking. Let's get the solar. And I'd love to go there sometime to see all the things that they're doing, because they've shown that you can do it if you want to do it. Also, I've read some other figures. This is kind of the wonky part. That show that their solar is much more affordable. It's just economies of scale. You know, they finally made it so it's a really competitive source of energy because it's been adopted so much. And then, so basically that just showed that solar installations are going up even in the United States dramatically as solar, and then the next slide shows the cost of solar panels decreasing. This is 1977, and then the last year on there is 2013, amazing. Very up to date, more than I thought it could be. So it's the Swanson effect. If you recall, maybe you've seen a graph like that for computers when we went from mainframes to distributed computing. This is like going from big power plants, centralized power plants, to distributed power generation, which tends to make them, the utilities, I mean, nervous. And I think that's why they're fighting so hard now. And then basically, this is another bad thing. Renew Wisconsin, another nonprofit that we work with a lot, have decided to make some waves about the latest announcement in which Focus on Energy actually suspended their renewable incentives for homeowners. That would have meant $1,200 a house, at least, when you do an installation. And why? It's less than $10 million a year they were outputting to that program out of this $54 million incentive program. I don't know if they're just incentivizing, you know, digesters for factory farms now or what, but I'm pretty disappointed, and hopefully you are as well. Okay? And there is a chance to take action. Like I say, Renew prodded the Public Service Commission to actually open a docket on this, and they have talking points on their website. And then I think you all know that it would very much reduce the dependence on fossil fuels to expand renewable energy. And right now, Wisconsin sends between $12 and $16 billion a year out of state to pay for fossil fuels, like petroleum, tar sands, oil, coal, natural gas, which we don't have. And then it would cost less than 3% for ratepayers to expand the renewable standards to 25%. So it's minuscule cost on you know, Wisconsin to do this, and it's something that would make a huge difference for climate change. Okay. And then we have this new partnership. Sierra Club's been kind of being a little bit frustrated with the state capitol right now in Congress. Decided to encourage people to just do the right thing as individuals. And so we've partnered with H&H Solar, a company that's located not far from here, Latham Road. And basically what happens is they have agreed to give us a sort of support, referral, payment, whatever, to support our work in Wisconsin, and give homeowners an equal discount, maybe to try to make up for that Focus on Energy issue. And then also, you know, allow people to take advantage of these lower solar rates now. And so we have a launch party on the far east side of Madison coming up. And flyers are going around about that. So with that, and so that's my son Darwin in Lake Superior. Absolutely. But I'm not in charge, so if there's time. We very much oppose the nearly doubling of the rates for the Green Power for Tomorrow program. We used to do 100% Green Power for Tomorrow, and in response, our family cut back to 50% for MG&E because we see that we pay this money year after year, and they're just not building renewables locally or supporting that. They're actually penalizing ratepayers instead. I don't understand the rationale, frankly. And there is another program called Repower that, so then our family at least does 50% in the Repower Now program that also Metcalf Center is doing, which is a different sort of program that fosters local renewable energy development. I'm not sure it's something that the Sierra Club nationally would support because it's pretty complex to start up your own renewable energy credit system and program. But I think that people should at least complain to MG&E if they're, you know, members of that utility. PSC said you can raise, I can't remember how it worked, the PSC said that you could raise your rates by a certain amount, and MG&E took that to the limit, or if the Public Service Commission really needs some pressure right now, though, because I see them making a lot of bad decisions, including the recent one that prompted the Focus on Energy and Renewable program to be suspended. Get this. The event on August 15th focuses on solar homes, and so that's a program that the Sierra Club has with H&H Solar, where we just started it this year. It was a very big thing to get the request for proposals and then evaluate the various companies. We chose H&H because they use union labor, they've been around for a long time, they use master electricians, they have the capacity to go statewide, which is, we needed to be able to work with one company. They give homeowners the option of using Helios solar panels made right here in Milwaukee versus China only. So they were a great company to work with, and they have been great to work with so far. So having just launched the program like a month ago, we want to let people know about that program that allows people to take charge of their energy use. So if you're in that sort of position, even if you're not, there's going to be appetizers and fun drinks for all. So definitely, you get to see the solar system on Andrew Banger's home, and he works for H&H, and just learn more about solar, even if now isn't the time. But as far as Focus on Energy, I just want to bounce back to that for a second. The City of Madison did have a low-interest loan program, which I saw as a bit paperworky when I checked it out. But really, like, there are some banks, Summit Credit Union, and I'm trying to remember, maybe your own local bank would be willing to finance energy efficiency or even solar upgrades at a really low rate right now. So that's what we have going for us. And then finally, I would say that those federal tax incentives at $1,500 tends to cover things like better doors and windows, whereas the focus is more like insulation, water heater, bath fan. So you can kind of have some additive rebate. If you leave people totally despondent about a giant global climate change problem, the easiest thing is just to go home, switch on the tube, and forget about it. Yeah. Obviously, the University of Wisconsin-Madison had some great research on adaptation, the Wisconsin Institute for Climate Change Impacts, WICI. Check it out, they're talking about adaptation. We're gonna need to do that realistically. As a scientist too, I would agree that solving is probably a misnomer at this point. Mitigating is a little more permanent.